Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
How Amazon reacted when one of their contractors decided to go union. Job cuts slated at one of the big three automakers. And today on the show, the toll of neglect. This year's death on the job report. And the United Steelworkers on the next generation. Welcome to the Friday, April 28th edition of America's Workforce, where we're available on at least six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We have two guests today, and today is Workers' Memorial Day. And joining us as our first guest is Rebecca Rindell. Rebecca is the Safety and Health Director for the AFL-CIO, AFL-CIO.org. And if you go to that website, there's a whole lot of information about the toll of neglect, death on the job report. I'll get to that in a minute. A little background on Rebecca. She provides safety and health support to unions and relies on workers' experiences, along with key research and other evidence to improve policies that strengthen workers' safety and health protections. This work informs everything from workplace exposures to chemicals, infectious diseases, lockout, tagout procedures, workplace violence, to retaliation for reporting workplace injuries and unsafe working conditions. She's got an extensive background in this. She worked on community-based research with workers on national policy at the EPA and OSHA using science in evidence-based public policy. She's also testified in front of Congress and federal agencies and has participated on a regular basis in the public rulemaking process. That's so important. You got to find out what's wrong, then come up with some kind of a plan to right that wrong. That's what it's all about. By the way, Rebecca's from a union family from Cleveland, Ohio. Her dad was a member of the United Steelworkers and United Association of Plumbers and Pipefitters. Her mom worked as a city employee for much of her career. So Rebecca's going to be our first guest, and we'll get into the details on the death on the job report. Let me just run down a few things here. The high toll of job injuries, illnesses, and deaths. Now, actually, these figures are from 2021, and that was, in the heart of the pandemic, no doubt about that. Every day, listen to this, 343 workers died from hazardous working conditions. Every day. That comes out to 14 per hour. 5,190 workers killed on the job in the United States. An estimated 120,000 workers died from occupational diseases. Black workers died on the job at the highest rate in more than a decade. Latino workers continue to be at greater risk of dying on the job than all workers. Employers reported nearly 3.2 million work-related injuries and illnesses. There's a rundown on states, too. States with the highest fatality rates. Number one is Wyoming, 10.4 per 100,000 workers. That's followed by North Dakota, Montana, Louisiana, Alaska, then New Mexico. And then there's a breakdown on industries with the highest fatality rates. Number one, agriculture, forestry, fishing, and hunting, followed by transportation and warehousing, then mining and oil and gas extraction. Construction is number four, and then wholesale trade is number five. There's a lot more to the report, and what we're really going to delve into is the fact, okay, we know the numbers. Who's investigating this? Well, that's where OSHA comes in, and we have a problem there because we do not have enough inspectors. In fact, listen to this. Federal OSHA, they're state OSHAs. Federal OSHA has 145 additional inspectors than it did from 2021 to 2022. But still, so I mean, they're moving in the right direction, but we got a long way to go. Still only enough to inspect workplaces once every 190 years. Two centuries? Come on. Got to check out this report again. It's posted on AFL-CIO.org, and Rebecca is going to run down as much as we can here as our first guest. Later in the show, we're going to check in with Connie Maben. Now, Connie is with the United Steelworkers, one of the many proud sponsors of America's Workforce. USW.org is their website. And before she joined them, she was a reporter and editor in five states for the world's largest news organizing outfit. That would be the Associated Press. Her last assignment was leading the AP's Cleveland office as bureau chief. She's a third-generation steelworker, and she says she's blessed to spend her time with the union telling the stories of working families across all digital platforms, including web, video, social media, and more. At the international office, she works with a dedicated and talented team. Duties also include leading the Next Generation program that aims to grow the union from within, as well as in the communities where we live and work. And this is through education, mentoring, inclusion, and community service. Connie also leads the union's program honoring and promoting community service called USW Cares. And she'll talk more about that on the show. Yeah, this new program, Next Gen, and what this essentially is in a nutshell, is targeting young people. Right now in America, there are a lot of people that like unions. I mean, between 18 and 34, and you're seeing that in organizing, especially in places like Amazon, Starbucks, some of the retail outlets, even in food service areas. So with that being said, we got to capture that and keep it moving. And that's what the Next Generation program is all about. And they're working that with the steelworkers. And depending on how it goes, I could see this happening in all unions. So Connie Maben will be the second guest, and she is director of New Media Next Generation on behalf of the United Steelworkers. Now a brief look into the world of labor, this segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management. 84 drivers and dispatchers at Battle-Tested Strategies. Now, that is an Amazon contractor. They entered a contract with the Teamsters, which the employer voluntarily recognized. The contract includes an immediate raise to wages, a schedule for meaningful future raises, and provisions that address vehicle conditions and heat exposure issues. We talked about that a lot last year, especially with some of the UPS members. And it was a brutal summer, and most likely it's going to continue. And that's been a real problem with delivery drivers. Well, get this. The drivers, while not direct Amazon employees, wear Amazon-branded vests. They drive Amazon-branded vans and only deliver Amazon packages. Now, the workers informed Amazon of their new union this week and asked that it comply with the terms of the contract. The contract may require Amazon to change how it deals with wage floors, selects delivery routes and schedules, and the termination powers that it retains. So, how has Amazon responded? Well, listen to this. When they found out about this, they said right away, whoa, these employees are not Amazon workers. And number two, that it had previously terminated Battle-Tested Strategies contract. Why? Because of poor performance. Eileen Hards is a spokesperson for Amazon, and she made the following statement. Whether the Teamsters are being intentionally misleading or they don't understand our business, the narrative they're spreading is false. This particular third-party company had a track record of failing to perform and had been notified of its termination for poor performance well before the announcement that they were going union. amazing. We talked about this the other day when it comes to union. This is not a union busting situation, but it's related to it. And on any given day in America, I think $3.4 million is being spent to bust unions and come up with a captive audience meeting to sway workers and get them away. And Amazon's going to go to every length. It doesn't even matter if they're breaking the law. But in this case, they shame the company that they contracted with. Stellantis, which is formerly Chrysler, wants to cut 3,500 hourly skilled and production jobs in the United States, and they plan to offer buyout packages corporate-wide. And this is according to a letter from a local UAW official. The letter, which was posted on the Facebook page of UAW Local 1264, said the issue was discussed in a phone call between the local's leadership and UAW Vice President Rich Boyer, who oversees the union Stellantis department. Now, Stellantis owns the Jeep, Ram, Chrysler, Dodge, and Fiat brands. The Local 1264 represents workers at Stellantis's Sterling, Michigan stamping plant. The openings created by the departures, which could happen between the end of June and the end of this year, would be filled by employees on indefinite layoff, according to the letter, which was signed by the president of the local. That would be Doug McIntosh. Spokesperson for the company declined comment when asked about the job cuts. Now, I will tell you this. This is all coming up as the company and the union gear up for contract talks. Their contract expires in September. This will be a big one to watch, along with UPS. UPS contract for the Teamsters comes up in July. Senator Sherrod Brown, a longtime foe of trade policies that he believes subsidize other countries at our expense, the U.S. expense, announced this week that he will vote to overturn the Biden administration's suspension of tariffs on Chinese solar products that go through other countries. This is what the senator said. The Chinese government will do anything to undermine American manufacturing and would like nothing more than to kill the American solar manufacturing industry before it takes off. Ohio is ready to lead in the manufacturing industries of the future, and we must not put that progress at risk. As part of an effort to promote more solar energy use in the U.S., Biden last year announced a two-year tariff ban on solar panels that originate in China and are imported from Cambodia, Malaysia, Thailand, and Vietnam. The point was to ensure an adequate supply of solar panels while domestic production ramps up. The administration's stance vexed Ohio solar manufacturers, such as Arizona-based First Solar, which produces solar panels in Perrysburg, Ohio. Statement from the company said the policy would undermine U.S. solar manufacturers by giving unfettered access to China's state-subsidized solar companies for the next 2 years. Good point. They went on to say that this sends a message that companies can circumvent American laws and that the U.S. government will let them get away with it as long as they're backed by deep-pocketed political pressure campaigns. So in the upcoming weeks, the U.S. House and the Senate are expected to vote on a joint resolution that would overturn that tariff suspension. So we'll keep our eye on that one. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to link up with the safety and health director of the AFL-CIO. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this upcoming segment is brought to you by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment. 216-666-2185. You can find them online at ulagency.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this portion of America's Workforce, sponsored by iMed, switching to managed vision care may save your fund money and deliver a better experience. So do this. Go to imed.com/union. And you'll learn a whole lot more. All right, let's go to line number one. And welcome to the show, Rebecca Rindell. Rebecca is the Safety and Health Director for the AFL-CIO. And today is Workers' Memorial Day. And this is a day we commemorate those who got up in the morning, didn't come home at the end of the day. And more often than not, it's because they were working in an unsafe workplace. Rebecca, welcome to America's Workforce. And welcome back. We had Rebecca on the show some time ago. And why don't you, you come from a union family in Cleveland. We always appreciate that. I'm born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio. Very proud of our hometown, the home of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Let's just re-familiarize our listeners with your background and how you found your way to the position that you have today as a safety and health director. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me and having me back. Sure. You know, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. I was raised in a steelworker family. You know, my dad worked in the steel mills, and my mom worked at the city. And, you know, I ended up doing my schooling in science, and that's ultimately what led me here. But what brought me back really was the labor movement and the opportunity to fight for, you know, safe jobs for folks. So, you know, happy to be on the show, and I'm happy to be with my hometown listeners.
And how long have you been with the Labor Federation?
Sure. I've been here 9 years, and before this, I actually worked with with OSHA, right? The federal agency responsible for enforcing our job safety and health laws. So, it's sort of been a road to get here, but, you know, this is ultimately, now with the labor movement, I've been here about 9 years.
Well, today is Workers' Memorial Day, and essentially you mentioned OSHA, and that's how this all started. Why don't you explain how Workers' Memorial Day came into being? Because we talk about worker safety on this show almost every day, and it's so important. It is getting better. It is getting better. I'll grant you that, but we still got some distance to go here. Why don't you give us a little history, and then we could get into the death on the jobs report. Go ahead.
Sure. You know, on April 28th, so today, 1971, we passed a law in this country, the Occupational Safety and Health Act, and other places around the world had started commemorating this kind of day. But the labor movement, and specifically the AFL-CIO in 1989, said, we're going to choose this date to observe Workers' Memorial Day. And we won that law because of the tireless efforts of working people and because of the labor movement. And it really drew major attention to work-related deaths, disease, injuries on the job, and, you know, an opportunity for folks to organize for safer working conditions and demand action from our elected leaders. So it's been more than 50 years, and we've really use this to make that promise of that law a reality in winning protections in workplaces and, you know, fighting for federal and state protections for people, regulations that have made jobs safer. They've saved lives. And also fighting for the opportunity and the chance for workers to speak up and use their voice on the job. So it is a day that is it is a day that is part commemorating and remembering those we have lost. And it is also a day for, you know, fighting for better conditions, better working conditions and dignity on the job.
Rebecca, over the years, you testified in front of Congress on these issues and a number of federal agencies on what you've been able to gather. And we're talking about using the science that's available and finding out what needs to be done to make workplaces safer. How has that been going? Because, you know, you're dealing with some people that don't think the government should be involved, that corporations have their own policies, let them do it. And see how things go. But I'm just wondering, how has that been working for you over the years?
You know, that's a good question. This work is just—it's so instrumental to what actually happens in workplaces and the effect that workers see. You know, the policies that their employers have, the floor level of protections, you might say, the baseline standard of what happens in workplaces. It happens so much at the government level, and so those directly relate to each other, right? So we got a silica standard passed, for instance, out of OSHA in 2016. That has made a tremendous impact on workers' lives. And it's why you walk down the street now and when you see a construction project going on, it's why you see a vacuum attached to a saw that's, you know, cutting brick or a rock and cement and blowing out dust. It's why you see a hose attached to another tool out there, because we know that that's how you control silica dust exposure and that's how you prevent really debilitating lung disease. So that standard has had an amazing effect in workplaces themselves and also has given workers the right to speak up and say, this is, you know, this is the standard that we have to follow. So, you know, to answer your question, it is, it's just important to keep pushing and to reminding our elected leaders where their responsibility lies. And the law that I mentioned passed in 1970 and went into effect in 1971 has laid out what these agencies and what these elected leaders have to do. And so this, you know, these policies are so critical to what employers end up having to, you know, put into place in their workplaces. So we just use that as a voice at the table. And, you know, like you said, we try to bring the science and the facts and the real exposure situations to those elected leaders and remind them to do their jobs and to take action.
Yeah. 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 Use the science. I know some people don't believe in science, but come on, we have to move in that direction. You talk about those who see something and don't say something because they're scared. In fact, a couple of unions use that. If they see something that's not right on the job, speak up about it so it can be corrected. I'm just wondering, are we getting better at that? Because there are people over the years, and you know this, Rebecca, that say something and then all of a sudden they lose their job. They get demoted. I mean, there's retaliation for whistleblowers. Mm-hmm. How are we faring in that arena right now?
So the retaliation piece, it's real. Workers under the law have a right to speak up on the job, but we know that that right is carefully used. But unions actually help protect people in that regard. So there are a lot of benefits of unions. We know that unions are have safer workplaces than non-union. There's actually a lot of research out there that shows that. And I know a lot of your listeners already know that. They also put workers as a seat at the table and provide protections against retaliation, the right for not just a seat at the collective bargaining table or a seat at any kind of, you know, joint safety and health committee with labor, with workers and management together. But it, you know, it helps protect folks from retaliation in those situations. And I did want to mention something, you know, from our Death on the Job report. You know, we really found some stark findings here. And and connected to your question. So we saw, yes, it has got, the job fatality rate has gotten better over the years, over decades. But we're actually seeing an uptick, and it's, the job fatality rate has increased since the year before, and it's not going up at the same rate for everybody, right? So there are people of color are experiencing higher death, higher rates of death on the job than many other workers. And everybody, you know, there are many dangerous industries out there, but it's not going up at the same rate for everybody. And it's just stark, it's unconscionable to see that there are folks who don't have the same representation as other folks either. So when we're talking about anti-retaliation, that feeds, and those whistleblower rights, those feed directly back into why are we seeing increases, who's being affected the most, and where are we seeing those?
I'm glad you brought that up. That was glaring in the report that came out this week about black workers. They died on the job, the highest rate in more than a decade. Latino workers continue to be at the greater risk of dying. Is that primarily because they work in more dangerous jobs? And I'm sure a lot of them are non-union facilities. Did the report indicate that?
Right. So they do work. The data is somewhat limited. We can see what's happening overall. They are working in dangerous industries. And, you know, a lot of other workers are also working in dangerous industries. There's also other things going on here too, right? There are this fragmentation in the workplace. We're using more contract work, more temp work. And there's not a lot of joint responsibility between employer contracting and folks, not training folks and saying, you know, just go run that machine over here. We've had a worker crushed first day on the job because it was a temp worker and he wasn't trained and there wasn't a procedure in place to communicate that. And he was a black worker. And so there are stark realities between who end up getting some of those jobs and who don't. And so they do work in dangerous industries, but they also have a great fear of speaking up on the job. If you are an immigrant worker, if you are a person of color, there are different fears associated with what that might mean for speaking up on the job. And if you're in a low wage job that might, you might, like you said, be at risk for losing your job or be retaliated in some other way, like it changed to a different shift that's less desirable, you're going to think twice about not just speaking up about unsafe working conditions, but you might not report injuries, which is also a requirement from employers to collect that information under the law. So there's certainly a lot going on there. It's really, it's a stark finding, and we definitely have to be, you know, doing something about it.
We're speaking with Rebecca Rindell, and she is the Safety and Health Director of the AFL-CIO today, and we're doing this today because this is Workers' Memorial Day, which is, what, 52 years since OSHA was created. And speaking of OSHA, and I know you work there, the cost of protection, this is glaring because we know that there's not enough OSHA inspectors out there. And under the Biden administration, they did bring more. But I see this in the report. One inspector for every 77,334 workers. And the OSHA budget, the current OSHA budget amounts to $3.99 to protect each worker. Rebecca, that one's a tough one to swallow here. So $4—that's what protection is today in the United States of America. Mike, that's gotta blow a lot of people away. It really does. I'm sure yourself included, right?
That's right. It's always mind blowing. You know, these resources are allocated by Congress. They're appropriated by Congress. So you have to get those with the purse strings to recognize that that job safety laws and enforcement, you know, need better funding, better support. The agencies need the resources to do their job. So if you want OSHA to be able to come into your workplace, we need that coming also from the top down in terms of funding and support. What's interesting in our report, we've done this for a long time. We do this calculation that shows how many years it would take for inspectors, for OSHA to come into every workplace once. So So all of the workplaces that they are tasked under the law to cover, you know, how what that would look like with their current resources. And the finding is that it current finding is that it would take 190 years for OSHA to make it to every workplace once. Now, that's not to say they don't have an effect on other workplaces that they can't visit in person, but that gives you an impression of the resources that they have available to do, you know, real inspections and also, you know, just being on site to see what's going on.
Yeah, and the other issue too, okay, they do the inspection, and obviously the company did something wrong, they get fined, but the fines are measly. And I know you got to go. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk to our listeners here a little bit about the fines and get into more of the report here. But I know you're busy today. It is Workers Memorial Day. Everybody wants a piece of Rebecca Rendell right now because this is an important day to commemorate. Again, those who get up in the morning, have their coffee and breakfast, and they don't come home at the end of the day because of an unsafe workplace. And there's many out there. And the laws, boy, I tell you, they need to be beefed up. Rebecca, let's do this again. This is a very important issue for our audience. And hopefully this will get some more media attention along with America's workforce. Okay?
Sure. Happy to join anytime. Thanks so much.
Okay. Again, go to AFL-CIO.org when you get an opportunity. And it's the death on the jobs report, the toll of neglect. Let me just read some of the fines here. The average penalty for a serious violation, this is in fiscal year 2022, $4,354. That's for federal OSHA. The average penalty for a serious violation for state in state plans, $2,221. The median penalty for killing a worker, $12,063. Only 128 worker death cases have been criminally prosecuted under OSHA since 1970. That's it. Incredible job on behalf of the team at the AFL-CIO on this. Again, death on the job, the toll of neglect. Do check that out. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to link up with the steelworkers and talk about the next generation. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those 5-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. And I'll tell you, the Ohio Federation doing a great job organizing libraries. In fact, following last month's ratification for a first contract for the staff at Worthington Libraries in Central Ohio, they're also dealing with contract negotiations at the Grandview Heights Public Library. And we salute what they're doing because this week is National Library Week. Libraries, you know they're important. So many people go there just for internet access. The staff works hard, so we're saluting the librarians in all of America. All right, let's go to Pittsburgh right now. Joining us on line number two is Connie Maben. Connie is Director of New Media and the Next Generation at the United Steelworkers. And we're going to talk all about it. But first, we got to get a little more acquainted with Connie Maben, who spent some time in the Associated Press Cleveland office some years ago. Connie, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today here on America's Workforce.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor. And even as a lifelong Pittsburgher, I have to say I do miss Cleveland. Cleveland was a wonderful city, wonderful, hardworking people. We're kind of more similar than we are different, really, when it comes down to it. So, I know.
When the Browns play, it's a whole different animal.
This is true. Enemies for a couple of hours and then on the same team.
Yeah. And it's like Ohio and Michigan. And I have to laugh, too, because and you know this, because the Steelworkers District 1 used to be Ohio and only Ohio. And now it's Ohio and Michigan. And you probably know Pat Gallagher. Pat Gallagher is a big football fan. He's a staff rep for District 1. And he says, man, I don't know about this. Joining up with Michigan right now at this time of my life, I don't know if I can handle that. But anyway, let's talk about Connie Maben here. You spent some time as a reporter and an editor, and you found your way to the Steelworkers. Talk to me about that.
Yes, sir. So I was a reporter and an editor for the Associated Press. I spent about a decade with the AP and most recently in Cleveland. In fact, I always say LeBron James and I had our rookie season together because I was a rookie bureau chief the same year he was a rookie with the Cavaliers. So that's my little connection to LeBron. But I was born and raised in Pittsburgh, as I said, which means I was born and raised in a union family. My dad, my granddad, my great-granddad, my grandmothers, all of them in unions. So I always had a connection to unions, always understood. I was the first person in my family to go to college. And I understood that that was afforded to me because my dad had a great union job. And when I had an opportunity to come work for the Associated or work for the Steelworkers from the Associated Press, it was a dream job. It was a no-brainer. And it was a bonus that I got to come home to Pittsburgh. So that's how that happened. And it's been a blessing.
Well, the Steelworkers, that's one powerful union. No doubt about that. And I always say this on the show that it's important to get the message out. And some groups do a better job at messaging. And it's important to get the union message out because it's very positive. We're seeing a lot of organizing going on right now. So you are the director of New Media and Next Generation. Now, that's something I got to unwind here a little bit because, and you know this because you've been in media. Media has changed dramatically, and especially on the digital platform. So can you kind of fill us in on what you're doing for the Steelworkers, Connie?
Sure. And you're absolutely right. It changes. And every day it's different. And the great thing about unions and our union in particular, Steelworkers, is we have an amazing story. We have amazing people, ordinary people across the United States and Canada who are doing extraordinary things. And when we share their stories and we invite other people to be a part of what we're doing to make their lives better at work and in their communities, it's endless possibilities. And so having the role of telling the union story, telling our members' story is really a dream job. And that has changed. You're absolutely right. You know, now people are scrolling. The way they scroll even has changed. When I started, your Facebook and social media was just blossoming. Now we've got TikTok and Instagram Reels, and there are just so many different formats to share our story, lots of creativity. it's a way to reach young people, especially. As you said, we're in a moment in our country right now where young people in particular are really taking control of their lives, particularly at work. And they understand that the union is an incredible tool to help them have a voice. And, you know, they reach out to us through social media. They see us on social media. We're relevant to them. They connect with our stories. So it's really an honor to be able to help tell those stories. And it's a really important job because it's one of the ways that we can cut through what I refer to as sort of like the man, right? The corporations, the those who don't want to get our message out there. We don't have to rely anymore on anyone telling our stories because we can do it ourselves. And mm-hmm. that has really changed the game.
Now, you use all the platforms, web, video, social media. Are they all like equal? Are there certain times that you use one more than the other? I mean, there's a lot at your disposal. Let's put it that way. Are you using all at once or what?
I always say it's a little bit art and a little bit science because it's, you know, that's also a great thing with digital tools is we have an incredible amount of data and analytics. And it sounds like you're a sports guy. Data and analytics has changed the way that sports is played and the way the games are managed. And it's the same thing with media. And we're able to look and see, you know, down to the littlest detail, like, you know, young people aged 16 to 18 like to look at purple videos between the hours of midnight and 2 a.m. So that gives us a really great roadmap to be able to be more effective with getting our messaging out there. So, yeah, we use everything. And we're really lucky at the union to be able to have talented folks who can do video and photography and really wonderful writers. And like I said, the heart and soul of who we are our members. They have amazing stories that we can get out there on all platforms.
Yeah, that's the beauty of digital today because you could track everything. And that's exactly what we're doing here on America's Workforce. We know where the most states listen to the show because we're on six different platforms. That's growing too. So we know when they're downloading the show. We know the areas. And you know what's interesting too? You'd be fascinated to hear this. We're getting an uptick in a lot of the southern right-to-work states, like a 30% increase, which is refreshing to me because they're getting the union message that they're not getting in those mm-hmm. respective states. And I'm sure you're doing a similar kind of thing here because I noticed that you're trying to grow the union from within. Isn't that part of the whole equation here?
Absolutely. And I actually am not surprised to hear that you're getting listenership in the southern states because we're organizing in the South. And you're alluding to our Next Gen program, which is our program to help younger people in the union, new people in the union, get more involved, get the skills they need to be effective leaders. And we've got a large amount of young people in the South who are really active in the union and who are not only active in our union as leaders at their workplaces, but trying to welcome other workers into the union by organizing. So I'm really not surprised by that. People in general, I think, are starting to connect with the idea of taking control, having a voice, being not just accepting that work, if it's bad, especially, they don't have to accept those conditions. You know, they can take control of it with a union and having the ability to get our message out there. And having you do this, which I thank you so much for helping us get our message out there, that's really changed the game.
That's what it's all about messaging. Connie Maben joining us on our live line today. She is the director of new media at the United Steelworkers, USW.org. For more information, we'll continue the conversation right after this.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
You'd like to upgrade your fund's vision care, but you need to roll back the clock on the cost. Roll it back to the 70s. iMed offers members 76% average savings versus retail on eye exams, glasses, and contacts. Enjoy similar benefits to an indemnity plan, but with consistent savings and a better experience. Endorsed by the National Labor Alliance, iMed takes a consultative approach to tailor your vision insurance benefits. Learn more at iMed.com/union. Figures based on client data. Visit iMed.com/union for more details.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit SurveyandBallotSystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. Let's go back to our live line from Pittsburgh today. Connie Maben joining us. Connie is the director of new media at the United Steelworkers. And new media, we're talking all digital platforms, web, video, social media. And she's been, how many years have you been in this position? And I know you have a team over there at the Steelworkers. They're not going to leave you alone. They're going to give you some people to work with over there. But how long has this been going on, Connie?
I celebrated my 16th year anniversary this month, actually. So it's been a long, amazing journey.
And this program here, what you're doing right now, how long has that been in effect?
That's an easy thing for me to remember because I gave birth to my daughter the same year that we gave birth to the Next Gen program, which was 2010. Since the union existed in 1942, helping the next generation come up, training those new leaders to take over and carry the torch has always been part of what we've done. We formalized it in 2010. And the reason we did that is because that was a moment in our union where a lot of baby boomers were retiring. You know, we, of course, the union changed with deindustrialization. We lost a lot of members. And when we lose members, we tend to use the younger folks first. So the union, like every other organization, was really different at that time, and we needed to plan for the future. So, and we also back then realized that we were starting to see the landscape change with the way that young people thought about unions, the way that they were connecting with unions, and we knew we needed a formal way to take advantage of that. And so we formed the program formally in 2010.
Yeah, Gallup did some studies on this, and right now it's over 70% favorability for unions in general. And the biggest bump is those between 18 and 34. They love what unions are doing. They want the PRO Act. They want it like yesterday. when you think about what's going on. But you were telling me here in the break about what's going on in Georgia. Okay, right to work state. And we got, and I know Alabama's got some pretty decent things going on as well. But talk to me about Georgia, how this program is working there.
Yeah, so I'm really, I feel like a proud big sister in many ways, because some of our very first next gen leaders who came through our program are now leading organizing campaigns across the union. But right now we've got one going on in Georgia with the Bluebird Bus Company. And Bluebird Bus, everybody who sees their kid get on a school bus every day, chances are that's a bus that's made by one of these workers in Middle Georgia. The conditions there are tough. The pay is low. And most importantly, the people who work there, they want to be treated with dignity and respect. And one of our next gen, our young workers who came through our leadership program, his name is Alex Perkins. He's one of the leaders on that campaign. And he actually used to work at Bluebird when he was young himself, younger, very young. And he talks about at that time, years and years ago, making $16 an hour. And more than 15 years later, the folks at Bluebird are still making $16 an hour. And that's one of the main reasons why they want a union. They want to have a say in earning the wages they deserve. And it's interesting because that's the marriage of Next Gen. We're seeing our young leaders who've come through our leadership program and have learned the value of our union try to get others in the union. And he's also using digital tools to do that. He's doing Facebook Live. We're doing some TikToks, Twitter, text messaging. We're using all of those tools to reach those workers because it is a different world. And one of the issues that we're seeing a lot is people are literally getting worked to death. You know, they, time off is so hard to get. That's an issue there in Bluebird. So we've got to reach people in different ways because you can't just knock on somebody's door and have a conversation all the time because people are at home. They're working all the time.
So where are we with that? I mean, we're in the middle of an organizing campaign. Do you see any light at the end of the tunnel? Do you see a vote coming up here soon?
We're very optimistic. We're hoping to vote in the middle of May. And we feel very good about it. The workers that we're talking to, they're excited. We have a lot of USW shops at other industries, glass and paper in that area. So they see the value. Their neighbors, their friends, the people they go to church with who are steel workers have a much better quality of life. And they want that too. So we feel very optimistic that we're going to win that one.
Yeah, that's a good sell, the union difference. And there's so much information out there, union versus non-union, the difference in pay, number one, the difference in benefits, the difference in retirement. I mean, safety on the job is another one. And when people understand that, they said, okay, I'm ready. It's time to go. Connie, we got a few minutes left here. I see you also lead the Steelworkers Community Service Program, and you promote it as well. It's USW Cares. Can you give us some details on that?
I would love to, and I would be remiss when you mentioned health and safety. Today is Workers' Memorial Day.
That's right.
And we have our program, and it's just been, even though the unions are growing, we're still losing too many people at work, and that is one of the main reasons why people need and want a union at work is to make sure they have a fair shot at coming home to their families. So I just wanted to take a minute to honor all of those that we lost over the last year and beyond, and especially with the pandemic. But yeah, USW Cares, steelworkers are leaders at work, and they're also leaders in their community. And it's not uncommon, I think, with any union, not just our union. It's the union members in those communities that show up, that are coaching the T-ball, that are raising money, that are collecting food and clothing. It's no secret that union members make higher wages, so they tend to be able to contribute more to our communities. And since we've had USW Cares, that's our way of promoting the good work that we do in our communities, just to show people we're there, we're present. We're good neighbors, but also it's a way for us to honor those everyday heroes that are doing really, really amazing things. If you search the hashtag USW Cares, you'll see some of their great stories. We've been able to show that our average union member in the steelworkers volunteers about 100 hours a year at every USW local. And when you add that up collectively, it's millions, actually, of community service hours that union members contribute. So when you take that out of a community, when a plant shuts down or a union goes away, it has an impact on the community, not just on our members. So
sure,
that's also something to think about. But it's amazing what our steelworkers do. They're amazing people in every way.
That's the untold story, and that's why you're doing what you're doing. Connie Maben, Director of New Media at the United Steelworkers. And to your point, yeah, we did a segment before we joined you with the AFL-CIO and talked about the death on the job report that was posted yesterday, the toll of neglect. And it's scary when you read all the details on that. AFLCIO.org, the website there. And, of course, your website, USW.org. Connie, it's been a great conversation. Thank you so much. Keep doing what you're doing. Let's revisit down the road and see how things are doing in Georgia Bluebird Bus. A salute to the young organizers down there. So you take care and stay in touch, okay?
Definitely. It's an honor. Thank you.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Monday, we're going to check in with the Iowa Labor Federation, talk about child labor, and the general president of the Painters and Allied Trades. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.